Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and The Japanese Box and other stories. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move On Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Happy New Year!
This is our first
Climb the Salmon. It is our first show after the new year. I think it's the third.
Yes.
It's the third. All right.
Yeah,
I'm like, is it the third? It's all been a blur since New Year's Eve. I mean, if you know what I mean. We are joined today by one of our favorite people, Tara Liskowski, author of The Weekend Retreat. Tara and I have been matched up in some shirts. If you're watching the video, it's only our shirts are the exact same. They just look different because of lighting. And I did costume change once I saw Tara was wearing the shirt that I was almost going to wear today. So I don't know if that makes me, I can't say it. I can't say anything. It's like everything's a spoiler for your book. I'm like, I don't know if that makes me a blah, blah, blah.
It makes you a very Stepford wife or like single white female trying to copy Tara.
Like, I'm just
like you. Whereas
I'm just like you, Tara.
My color palette today is in honor of your book cover because I'm like wearing some of the same.
Oh my God. Well, that makes more sense then.
But I had it on NetGalley. So yeah, see, I kind of match it a little bit. The purple.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you do. You do. Definitely. So, Tara, welcome back to Vox Vomitus. Last time you were here was, gosh, ages ago, like a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And you were here talking about your book, The Mother Next Door, which we loved.
I was so excited to come back. I love you guys.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So you probably posted one of the nicest things that's ever been posted about Allison and I on the internet. You said we were the best podcast podcast hosts ever, and we were like, what? We say that about ourselves.
Yeah, and we pay people to say it, but we didn't pay you this time, so we owe you.
No, I fully expect the check in the mail.
Oh, so.
Yeah, I just like don't cash it right away.
Yeah, let's keep that for later, like use it as a bookmark for a while.
Oh my God, definitely use it for a bookmark.
So it's a souvenir.
It's a souvenir from being on our show. A check you can't
cash. That's all it is here.
Tara, tell us a little bit about The Weekend Retreat, which came out December 26th, if I'm correct.
You are correct. It came out during that week after Christmas where no one knows anything about where they are or what day it is.
No, just filled with cheese.
Well, I will say it was already in the newest Barnes & Noble here in Orange County. So they already had it. And I was like, and I somehow left my house without my phone because I was going to take a picture. And I'm like, I don't have my phone. Oh, but they have it in stock.
Your phone?
I was barely awake. And I was just like, we need to get out of the house. And I took my daughter down to spend all the little gift cards burning a hole in her pocket. So, oh, and Carol says an excellent holiday present to me. So yes, it's your Boxing Day present. There we go.
Yay.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. So anyway, what is this about? It's one of those locked room style thrillers, I guess. But I didn't want to, I don't know. A lot of those are set on islands, right? Where you can't.
I mean, they have been since Agatha Christie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a great premise. You're on an island.
I love it. And I love those books. Like, I read them all the time. So I'm like, how can I change that setting, like, slightly?
Add wine. And, you
know, make it more drunk.
Just add wine.
Anytime we go to a winery, I lose cell phone reception immediately. You know, and you're going down these, like, crazy dirt roads, and it's, like, far off, off the grid and stuff. So I'm like, oh, that would be great, because it's, like, this glamorous setting on it. Winery and this beautiful estate, but you can't maybe make a call if you are in distress or someone's there to murder you or whatever. So
just in case.
And it's about this like super rich family, the Van Ness family, and they go there that they own this winery and estate. They go there every year to celebrate the birthdays of the twin siblings in the family. And so they're there for a long weekend with their significant others, and of course, terrible things happen.
I know. Of course, there's a storm. Of course, people overdrink and overshare. I love all of those things. Like any book that has terrible things happening to rich people in a secluded place. It is my favorite thing. I feel like terrible things happening to rich people at a secluded like vacation spot is almost as good or tied with a bunch of girls who were in a sorority who did something bad and now are super successful have to pay for it. Those are my two favorite. Like, I'll read any book that has that remotely in it.
Laura says, ladies, overdrink and overshare. Well, that's what we're doing on the show today.
No, except we're not overdrinking because it's coffee. You know, day.
I have a wine glass, but it's water, so boring.
And it's dry-ish January.
Dry-ish? I didn't know there was an ish.
I don't really follow it, though.
Yeah, I don't follow it. That's why I'm like dry-ish, where you just go, look, New Year's Eve was a lot.
Let's just sober up Saturday. That's different.
Sober up Saturday. Mm-hmm. So, Tara, I feel like there was like a throwaway line in your book that I just became completely obsessed with when somebody was like, well, you're not a Kardashian. And I'm like, oh my gosh, because I was like thinking of the Van Nesses. I'm like, they're not quite Kardashians. They're like a little bit.
They're less vapid than that.
They're definitely less vapid and like
no
a little bit more
Kardashians.
Business savvy. I know, no offense, Kim Kardashian, if you're watching this. did you have to like research rich, weird families? Like, and which ones did you research? Were they pharmaceutical families? Were they?
Pharmaceutical family.
I'm trying to figure out famous families that you're like, I can see why there would be a blog about how crappy they are.
Yeah, it was kind of like mashing up a bunch of different things. So I was thinking about like the Kennedys, right? And like they live on this, this compound and like this idea of this like place they go where it's gated and, you know, people hopefully can't get in.
And it holds a ton of alcohol and their childhood trauma.
Just like places, like families with rich families just tend to have scandals in their history at some point, right? So it's really not that hard to find examples. But I was also looking like more historically at like some of those like the reclusive widows who inherit like, you know, $15 million will never see her, and like just all this like weird stuff, and like the way people fight over money, you know, if somebody dies, and like the will, and it's like there's a cliche around that, but it's also like it really happens in real life.
Oh, it happens really even when even when people don't have as much money. Like, not in my family, but there were friends I know where someone died with not even that much, but how it was distributed was obviously inequitable. And then everybody's pulling out the histories of, well, they gave me this because you were like this to them, and so of course I get, and it's just ugly. There's like nothing that makes people uglier than an inheritance.
Well, right. It made me very thankful to be an only child because I never have to say the words, well, mom loved me the most. I mean, I'm an only child and I can't even say that.
That's true. I'm sorry.
Like, I can't even be like, well.
I think you came second to a bird, maybe.
Bird, a cat.
Who knows?
Maybe a dog.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think there's been families where they've left the money to like their dog, and then like somebody has to be hired to take care of the dog. It's very strange.
I know. Anyway, I always wonder, like, then, like, who signs the check? Is like it can't be signed from? It's just a paw print.
Is that legally binding?
Don't tell Lord Tubby if that is binding. He'll push me down the stairs.
He's like, I am now the lord of this manor. He's already named Lord.
We've created our own future. It is bleak.
But you create this really interesting family. And I loved, like, so I've read books, and I was telling Jen, I actually had read a book kind of similar, at least at the outset, where there's the new person in the family. What will they think of me? Because one of the significant others who comes is not a married spouse. They're the girlfriend of the younger sibling. And it's the whole, what are the rich people going to think of me? And it's just like the most terrifying thing of, what is the family going to think? Oh, and also they're extremely wealthy and famous, and how will I stack up? So there's like that whole aspect, but I love that you have multiple POV, because it wasn't just the outsider's POV, but the different women's POV. And then The party guest. They're so festive, that party guest. I love those little interstitial chapters, which I can't say more about them, but, you know, everybody has to say about how this should go.
I always like writing the anonymous point of view.
I love it. Because it can be the most honest and biting. Mm-hmm. You know, like you don't need to. It's when you can, as an author, not like or love your characters when you see them from like another point of view. It's weirdly almost like, you know, like your editor or your agent or your beta reader going, oh my gosh, you know what I hated about Harper, or you know what I hated about Richard, and you're like, I have a whole character that's going to say all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really fun to write, and that you can be like experimental with the tone a little bit, and you know, it's just fun. But yeah, Lauren's the outsider, like she's the girlfriend that's coming, and I really identified with her at first when I started writing it, because of that feeling of being like that outcast or like, you know, nervous, like coming in and stuff. But then I started to love Harper, who's the Van Ness sister, because she's just such a bitch and like so much fun.
She was fun to, she must've been so much fun to write. She was fun to read. And I will say, cause this was going to be one of my questions. I think we probably all related to Lauren at first because she's the outsider. And she's also a writer. And so I felt I was like a Lauren and then an L by the end.
L. Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh no, is part of me Zach?
So, no, I mean, go ahead,
Sarah. Like L because of the perfectionism kind of thing? Like, is that what you identified with her?
I feel like I did. So as somebody, I can say this because my husband's family does not watch this podcast because they don't really speak English and I love them. But for so many years, I've been like trying to be like the perfect daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
You know, just by like just probably trying too hard at most times. And then I finally gave up trying. And then I somehow, they finally accepted me. And I was like, oh my God, they do love me in their way.
Yeah.
In their way is very important. So I was like,
I love that they don't speak English because
they're not watching this
right now. No, I think the thing that I related to about Elle was, so if Elle is the sister, or she's the wife of the older sibling. So there's twins and it's a fraternal set. So it's Richard's wife, Elle. And she is the one who basically has, after the death of the mother, so this starts about, what, 6 months to a year after the death of the matriarch of the family. She's the one who's like, I'm holding this family together. I'm keeping the traditions going. I'm the one who's done all the, what they talk about is the emotional labor of the family. So everything that is undervalued, underappreciated, but they would notice if it wasn't there, things that like the mom would have done, but now that the mom's dead. And so like, Harper's off living her amazing career. I don't know what's going on with the sunshine here. It just got very exciting over here. I feel like I'm a.
Oh my God, talked about Harper, and I felt like it was like Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop line.
She's totally Goop. Yeah,
she is totally Goop, and I love
that. Yes,
it's a basic. I was just like, the Goop vibes were
but
so
strong. I liked Harper more than I like Goop. No offense to Goop. Okay, maybe some offense to Goop. No, but I felt like, but Elle does all this emotional labor and she's undervalued for it while everybody else is out there like, oh, I've got my fabulous product line, or I bought another company, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. And she's like, yeah, but I'm the reason you guys can do all those things and still hold it together. And I feel like Elle is in many ways the every woman, because even if you aren't holding together an estate, even if you're not holding together, say, you know, the Van Nesses, a lot of people can relate to that. And I found her, like, the CBD is like just a little bit more anti-anxiety meds. I'm like, that's me right there.
Yeah, I did like, okay, just like 3 drops of CBD oil. Let's 3 drops more. All I need is 2 drops more and then a cocktail. And I'm like, you know, good for you.
Yeah.
And Carol, you get through that weekend.
Yeah. Carol says, also interesting that Elle did all that work, but had married into the family. So it's like she's somebody who, it's not even her family tradition she's trying to do. She's doing it for them, for giving these things alive. And she's also the one who's like, she's probably the favorite, even if of the dead mother, even though she's not bloodline related.
She is. I think the thing about her, though, is she wants she wants all that credit. And so I think some of her,
there's some passive aggressive stuff there that I was like, oh, I hate that about me. And now I'm seeing it in L.
So relatable.
Yeah. Hence why I'm like, oh, am I the L after all? Oh, not in a good way, in a bad way. So we've mentioned the words family traditions a few times. This family has a tradition of really kind of strange games.
I don't like their traditions. Let's just put it that way.
You know, traditions. So many blindfolds. So many. So where did this idea stem from? Were you just, was it, because I know you love dark. I know you love twisted. You are a Halloween baby after all, in the best way. Did you have to be reined back from this getting darker, or were you, or are those weird things? And what can we talk about to not be super spoilery?
Yeah, I don't want to spoil some of these things.
Yeah. The game thing. I don't think this is a spoiler. They play a game at one point that's sort of this weird family tradition where they go out at night and they put blindfolds on and they run through the woods, which is so bizarre. And I actually had thought about trying to do this to see if
oh my gosh, no.
But I will not even go out into my backyard with not blindfold on at night because I'm afraid of
Honestly, like two nights ago, I needed to check the mail, which is at the very bottom of our very, very dark, long driveway.
Yeah, and you're on hill.
And I was like, I'm not doing it. But I know for a fact I have makeup that was delivered. So somebody needs to get it. So I'm just like, I made my husband do it. And he's like, oh, my God, like out there were like two flashlights. And I was just thinking of this family blindfolds on, like
in the dark.
It's weird. They're so weird. They're so weird, right? But I really feel like
they're so weird. You made them. You created them.
I know, but I don't know. There's something so creepy and strange about it, and it felt like it matched their person, like what they would do as a family, like this testing and this like
competitiveness. You know,
the competitiveness and like just
and all the omens and the signs of like if you can't do this, it means blah, blah, blah. If this happens,
you're not worthy.
Then you're going to be cursed somehow or something. So, like, I don't know.
It has, like, really great kind of, like, gothic overtones, which I always love, especially when they're put into, like, a crime or a mystery novel where you're not expecting, like, this old gothic mansion or somebody to say, oh, if I find a broken vine, it means blah, blah, blah. And you're like, I was just here for the murders. And now.
And then this happened. Well, and Jennifer Runart says, yes, the traditions are my favorite. So imaginative. I felt some of them were kind of influenced by like fraternity or sorority hazing or things like, and I wasn't in one, but I was in band and we went through some similarly screwed up stuff. Were any of these drawn from things you experienced, or were you just playing what? How could I torture these people and call it fun?
It's a game.
No, not at all. I've never done that. I will never. I'm afraid of too tall grass. Like, I don't like to walk in grass.
Too tall grass? Define too tall, Tara. How tall is too tall?
There is a word for this. Like, there is actually a phobia word for grass that you're afraid of that's too tall.
And is it the title of your next book?
No.
Like, I can't mention it aloud because
that title.
It's just one of those long words that I can't remember. So
it's probably German and has like four parts to it. I love how German just shoves together words. And they're like, now it's eight words and just one. Take one big breath and then and Ober's probably in there too. And Führer. Sorry, that's just Man in the High Castle. Go on.
No, I'm afraid of like bugs. I'm afraid of stepping in something that's rotted. I'm afraid of like snakes, small animals. You know, it's just not, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, you know, I was, back in October, I was at a book signing event with Clay McLeod Chapman and Chuck Wendig, and they referred to this signing event as crab apples because one of their books, Clay's, is about, there are crabs and Chuck's, there's apples in it. And going into this event, I was like, I have many irrational fears. One of them is crabs of any kind. And the other one is like rotted apples or apple orchards not on season.
What?
Yeah.
Right. And I was just like,
of non-seasonal.
I totally understand
this.
I totally
It's just like all the bare trees and their branches are like fingers.
Okay. Was this related to Wizard of Oz as a kid where the apple trees get
to? No, it was weirdly like related, I think, to a Dr. Seuss book that had weird trees, and it wasn't the Lorax. It was this one that was like all like dark blues and greens. And maybe just growing up in New England, like seeing so many apple orchards off season where you're just like, what? Just like miles and miles of them. And then like one house in the background. And I'm like,
this is how I feel about vineyards. They're also super creepy when there's not grapes, right? They have the
exactly.
vines and there's like the rows and rows and rows of them.
Rows and
like,
rows. Yeah, no, that's the same.
I'm here in California, and I've seen plenty of those, and they have yet to creep me out, and now they probably will. Thanks a lot, Tara.
Yeah, I mean, I was creeped out when I went to Napa, but for entirely different reasons. Just too many rich people.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Too many rich people in one place. I was like, uh-oh, they're going to know I don't belong in Napa.
Well, and I love how you even touch on like the wine snobbery part of it, where it's like different people in this family have different careers and different ways that they make their money. But the idea of like, oh, but yes, you also need to know about wine. And there's such a pretentiousness there. And I still remember years ago having a glass of wine at a really nice restaurant with some friends and going, I really like this, and describing it and basically being told, no, that's not how you describe it. Like, look, my tongue tells me what it tastes, okay? You don't like it, that's fine. But like that whole pretension, like, oh, you need to know the notes of the oak and the cherry and all that stuff. And it's
I
like,
taste the tobacco.
Does it taste good? Yes. Then I want more. Like, that's how I leave it at it.
Did you go on fancy wine tastings? Did you like in, because I know you did wine research. Did you actually have to go to places where you're like, I taste the black cherry?
I mean, I've done that before, you know, in the past. I'm not by any means knowledgeable about wine at all.
I'm just saying, this opportunity to write off the check to say, oh, this was research for the book. I had to see how the other half lives.
Yeah, I'm much more of a bourbon cocktail person than a wine person, but Google can like find anything, so I can find tasting notes for stuff. But to Allison, your story about the restaurant friends or whatever, it reminded me that one time I was at a restaurant and the waiter asked like what wine we wanted, and I ordered a Riesling, and he was so snobby about my Riesling.
They tend to be. And if I'm you like, say Riesling, they're like
a bad wine. Like I was like very
the baby wine, because I will say when I first started drinking wine, like Rieslings and Gewurztraminers were the only thing I could tolerate. Like, I don't drink them a lot now. I still like them, but I tend towards like a more full-bodied red. But I wonder if they look at it as like, you're a beginner. Like, you just like the sweet.
I feel like because it's sweet, they think it you is. Might as well be, I like, and that's what I like about it. Like, you might as well be ordering a plate of Twinkies.
Does it
Yeah, I think it was Twinkies.
Does that sound good?
But I had no idea. And I was just like, okay, snobby. Like,
then maybe don't put it on your list if you don't want me to order it.
I mean, I don't know. He was just rude. But this is like the family's wineries in the Finger Lakes and Rieslings, and that wine that you just said, Allison, that I can't pronounce, are like the big.
Back to the Germans.
Whatever German wines are is what the same. Yeah. It's like the same climate as the Finger Lakes. So they have a lot of those German wines. So Rieslings are hugely popular there. So I was able to write
And I love that you talked about ice wines and dessert wines in the book, because I'm like, ooh, ice wines. And I'm like, those are normally very sweet. And I'm like,
we're like, hey, this is the kind
that's of why I like it.
Yeah. They're also apparently really hard to cultivate, because if the weather doesn't cooperate, you can like ruin an entire. This is part of
this is why the bottles are so small and so expensive.
Yeah, they're good.
So, yeah, they are good. So Tara, Tara. Sorry. I'm like, everyone, one of my BFF's name is Tara, so I'm going to keep going into that. Tara, we talked a little bit about your process in writing this before we went live. And by process, I mean the amount of months you cried. And because our show is Vox Vomitus, we do like to talk about, you know, sometimes it goes horribly wrong before it goes right. Can you tell us a little insight on like what part of this amazing book made you cry for so many months during the writing process? So you're like, I can't talk about it.
Oh, no, I can talk about it. I had originally set the original idea for this was not a family. It was a group of friends who came to this winery. And so I actually had written a huge chunk of the book before realizing that the way I had set it up, the people had not been in touch for a long time and did not have the secrets and the tensions between them that really was going to like make a book that only is only set over 3 days work. Yeah. So I had to kind of re-envision it as a family, because obviously family has so much past. There's so much tension. There's so much like stuff going on. And so that made it a little easier, but it was,
but how long were you writing it before you got to the point where you went, oh, it's not working?
I got about 60,000 words in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot. Ooh. For people who are like, I don't know what that means, because only authors talk in word count rather than pages, like a normal
70%.
Yeah, that's like a good 70%.
Oof.
That's why I'm like, oh, ow.
We hurt just hearing that. But I mean, I do understand why that would be a fun premise, but you wouldn't have that whole, because as soon as you have the whole, well, they're friends, then people can just not go if people are being idiots. You know, it's the whole family. Right. You have to go even if you don't really like these people sometimes. And the concern about, oh, this person's new to the family, it's very different. Although I do know that there are groups where it's like, oh, I know my parents and my mom has passed away since then, but they went to college with a group of people that it was pairs, and then one guy got married later and he'd keep showing up with like a different woman each time, so it was like, oh, is this one actually gonna stick? So I can see how some of that might play out, but it's a little different.
Or is he
like
gonna break up with her because she put ice in a glass of wine,
dude?
Hate to say it, I do that, and I got to that line and I'm like,
you'd get dumped too.
I would definitely be dumped by a Van Ness.
Yes, you absolutely would.
And we all would, but as I'm just like, glass, a little ice cube and some Chardonnay during summer. I'm like, uh-oh. I did it in Italy once, and they, like, looked at me like I needed to be kicked out of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was really hot. And I'd been drinking since, like, 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's just sad.
So 60,000 words into this book, you decide this is... And did you come to that realization on your own?
Yeah.
Or, okay. That's even worse.
That was actually an improvement, because The Mother Next Door, I actually wrote the entire draft and then threw it away. So this was an improvement because I only got 75.
This is why we love you, Tara. This is why you're here. You are our Vox Vomitus spirit writer.
Well, and that's why it's like,
I have the worst process ever.
Everybody has a different process, and it is also like that ability to know it isn't working. There are people who do like, they're sure it's working, and then afterwards I get told, oh no, it needs to be completely different, and then they still hold on to whatever isn't working. So the fact that you can recognize that it isn't and make it work, that's a good skill, even if you're like, maybe it could happen, 5,000 words in, not 60 or full draft.
Yeah, that would be so much easier.
So much easier. So my only goal for this next book.
Do you outline? Or are you just like in the thick of it?
Jen, you just jumped out and then back in, and it was weird. So I had to put you back where you were, but we missed half your question. So
So I was saying, do you outline? Did you have like a full plan before you went into this? So is that why you like committed to the 60,000 words, or was it just, you know, you're in it to win it, and then at 60,000 words you went, okay, now,
I don't actually remember at this point what it was. I
blocked it out. I got that.
Like my face right
now. Yeah, I honestly don't know. I don't think I did really outline. I tried to outline my previous book, and that didn't work. So this time I was like, no, I'm not going to do that as much. I'm going to not worry about an outline. I'm just going to kind of see what happens, and that didn't work. So I honestly don't know what works. So
I think this is why we started podcast.
Because I've heard so many people were
the
like,
worst process ever.
Well, and
just
there's
writing a novel is the weirdest thing.
Just outline, and I am not an outliner, and I recently was like asked to do a certain amount of pages plus a detailed synopsis. And I'm just like, you do know that because of the way I write, that's not actually possible, because whatever I'm putting in the synopsis isn't going to be what the book is, because the book doesn't exist until I'm like writing the book. So I can't write a synopsis for what doesn't exist. Like, you see how there's like a chicken and an egg and a cart and a horse and whatever it is, it's not going to work. And I still created something, but I know it's not going to reflect that. And it's like, there's certain things right. in publishing that only work for certain kinds of writers, but we shouldn't limit who gets book deals to people who produce in a certain fashion, because there's no correlation to, oh, those books are better because they came from an outline. It's like, I don't think that's how it works.
And look, some of my most favorite yeah. books don't make any sense.
Okay, that's true.
Not saying that Tara, The Weekend Retreat did make sense, but I'm mostly talking from my own point of view.
No, and I, you know, one of my favorite things to do, because I just have a sickness in my head, is I love reading bad reviews of books I loved to see, like, how did somebody give this amazing book a 1 or a 2 star? So I enjoy reading those to just go, you're wrong, or wow, you totally didn't get what this person was trying to say or do. But it is interesting, because it's like everybody has a different take on things, and what you might think is just beautiful, somebody else like just complete rejection of the concept. And like, so Jennifer thinks that they might not make full sense. I'm like, yes, but that's what I loved.
I remember, like, so I had a draft of my current work that's like out on sub, that, and I wrote this chapter that I was just like, it's the most beautiful chapter I've ever written, like the most beautiful words.
I know what happens to this chapter.
Yeah. I mean, and I get it. It had nothing really to do with the plot. And somebody was like, just cut this. And I'm like,
how dare?
That's the soul of the book. And then I'm like, is it the soul of the book?
Oh, dear.
Just put it in a...
Ed,
uh-oh.
Repeating a question Tara never fully answered on a panel I once saw. What is a sentence?
Wow,
I don't remember
that. She's like, I've selectively removed that from my memory. I'm just laughing because there's a YouTube video from Real Celebrity Jeopardy, not the SNL version, where it's the question, the answer is, what are frogs? And I think Stephen King answers, what are frogs? But then David Duchovny like echoes it and goes, what are frogs? And then it goes into the X-Files thing. And it's like, what are the frogs' motives? And where are the frogs coming from? It's like, what is a sentence? Why is a sentence? What
Why
do we do with
is a sentence? And does a sentence need to be
Boucher
real?
Com, Boucher com, butch, I can't
don't think
pronounce
that was the question. I feel like the question was something like, what is point of view? Or something like...
This is when you and Ed, so you two have like a really hilarious friendship.
I love like, their frenemyship.
I'm obsessed
with
it. Is
that what you call it? A friendship?
Yeah, or like Stockholm syndrome, but I'm not sure who is the victim. And yeah, I don't understand.
I'm pretty sure it's Tara. Come on.
I know, but I mean, you never know.
She's not here to defend herself. So, you know.
I know he's gone now. He's like, oops, back to the day job. Bye,
you know what's
friends.
Happening. No, but I mean, I think even when you're getting to things like point of view, I loved the point of views in this book, and I loved how you worked these things together to create a narrative that would like shift as far as a scene halfway. And I was like, now with the scenes from this person's point of view. And I love that it's a trick with multiple point of view that I love, and I don't think it's used often enough. Like, switch the scene halfway through to what this person's thinking about it and having it. I also like that you really like that you only picked the female characters' points of view, and one of
did
them
did anybody even want to hear Zach's point of view?
No,
I didn't.
I kind of wanted to hear, honestly, of the people who were there who didn't get a POV. I would have wanted to know more about Lucas. He's the one that's Harper's husband. I want to know more what's going on in his head.
He seemed the hottest to me, yes. But I also wanted the point of view of like the caretaker. Is it Bill?
Bill and Lynette, or Lynette.
Yeah.
Lynette,
I'm like, I would have loved like a good Lynette chapter, a good yeah. Bill chapter, even if it was just the prologue. I'm like, more Bill, please.
Yeah,
the point of view when he has to like come out there in the middle of the storm, like, hey, idiots.
Yeah, they don't know where the generator is. Yeah.
They don't know where the generator is. That's like, not even a spoiler, but I loved it so much where they were like, we don't even know where the generator is.
Well,
like,
I will say there's
you don't deserve that house.
We can't talk about because of the, but just right from the beginning, it starts with like, stuff has happened and we can't access it because you create this perfect, like the way that you made the island, so to speak, is right. by cutting them off by natural disaster and or weather so that people can't get out there. So you have these inner sliced little bits of news stories and it could be this and we think it's that, but no one has been able to reach the family for comments. And it's like,
I am a huge, and I know Allison is as well. We've talked about this every time there is a book that has like a news story or a radio broadcast.
Found footage.
I'm like, found footage.
Found footage.
I love it so much.
I probably should put yours on my Goodreads shelf for found footage, but there's not quite enough of it to qualify because it's not like that's the main storytelling.
Right.
It's more of a frame. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like.
But like, I write such slow burn thrillers that I feel like I need to have something up front that says like, hey guys,
don't
really
worry,
bad
something
stuff
will happen.
There will be bodies. There will be. Just
there will
on.
Be.
They're not dead. Yes. Hurt.
Exactly. I've had to do that as well where I'm like, uh-oh, they're not going to understand it's a thriller. Unless I break in with a news article or like start
breaking
with
news.
The death and then be like,
three months earlier, there's a corpse. There's a bunch of corpses.
Yeah. Like we're just like, it seems fun right now. Oh, they all end up dead. I get it.
But does it? Yeah. And I, you know, and I also love anything where it's like you're planning for a party, especially an opulent party, and just hearing about like, oh, what's good. And then the caterer and like the digs at Lynette's cooking. It's like, it's going to be catered. No offense, Lynette. And I'm just thinking, this poor woman is
Lynette.
Cooking.
She's given her life to family. This family.
Seriously. Maybe I relate more to Lynette than
I know. Yeah, I started as a Lauren. I ended up realizing I'm a Lynette slash Bill at the end of the day, where I'm like, you don't know where the generator is.
Seriously. Well, that in the whole, like, all these people, meals all the time. I was like, oh, all of you are here. I got to feed all of you people. And you're not all going to eat the same thing, are you? That's been my life. Like, my kids go back to school on Monday after it would have been a 3-week break. And it's just like, wow, how many meals am I cooking a day? I think it's 7 because people aren't all eating the same stuff. And I'm just like,
yeah. Well, at least people in the night mostly get the estate to themselves. Like,
yes.
I know, because they do make a point that, like, most of the time, nobody's there. Yes. And I just have this vision that Bill and Lynette have just, like, this wild life when nobody's there. Like,
it's like, they're coming. Everybody get quiet.
Let's go in the secret tunnel. That are also mirrors.
Yes. Spoiler alert, secret tunnels.
Spoiler alert, secret tunnels. But please, if you're in a big, giant mansion on a vineyard...
If you don't have them, then that's just a disappointment. So there will
poor
be
poor architecture.
Tunnels. Yes.
If there's no boarded up servants' quarters, I'm sorry.
I have to tell you guys though, my son drew the floor plans of the estate for me.
Did he?
He's 12. And he, as he was drawing the floor plans, and I'm telling him how the secret passages work and everything, he's like, "That's just like not physically possible, Mom."
And you're like nobody wants to hear that.
Because he had to take a doorway out of one of the rooms that was too large, and he told me that it's not up to code. So apparently, like,
why does your 12-year-old know this stuff, Tara?
He wants to be an architect, so.
But he already knows code at 12.
Yeah. He's yes. This is
we need like a special. We need like a special online meetup for our children who are like smarter than we are in certain things. Like that's because like my eldest is like that in many ways, and I'm just like, why are you the responsible one in the family? You just turned 13.
The way he can draw stuff too, I'm like, I have no talent whatsoever in this. So
well, and Jennifer Renner wants the bodice ripping Bill and Lynette fan fiction steamy romance. So
oh my god, I want that too.
The steamy romance,
Jen, you go to town. You write
I'm not good at writing sex scenes. I think everybody who's read my work understands that.
Yeah, but at least the one that I've read of yours was intentionally cringe. It wasn't like, wow,
that's all I've written.
Sexy, and it was not. It
was, like, only writing intentionally cringe love scenes. Love scenes, sex scenes.
Yeah, I was just saying, don't call it a love scene. That's not
there was no love.
No.
My God, but Bill and Lynette, maybe I could get behind that.
nobody realizes this is who you're shipping. But I mean, I don't want to spoil
everyone's anything, like, they're not the main characters, Jennifer.
It doesn't matter. But there are some pairings in this that maybe people aren't expecting. So there's some interesting things happening as far as other relationships and people who show up who are like, oh, who are you here? And maybe you shouldn't be here. And that's not even the party yet. So just some of the different stuff you bring in there. So I've read other books where there's like, and everyone has secrets. Like, I think everybody knows everyone has secrets, but I loved how all the secrets kind of played off each other, that I feel like you would have had to sit down, and being someone who didn't outline this, like, did you have like a web of lies? And you're like, this person's lie connects to this person's lie, connects to that person's lie, connects to that person's lie. And then your son comes in and goes, Mom, this doesn't work.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, it doesn't work. Those tunnels do not connect.
That was part of my insanity, I think,
can it make sense? Yes, yeah. This makes sense. And I think we've all been there as writers, like when you're 3/4 of the way through, or even after draft 2, when you're like, it's kind of the draft now. And then you're rereading it and you're like, huh, that doesn't connect. That doesn't make sense. How do I make it make sense?
Well, and so Ed wants to know, Ed Amar asks, serious question, do any of your characters from other books or short stories ever recur?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question, Ed.
Question. We don't expect this.
I know, I'm sorry, really, but it's Ed, so really? Shocked.
I think this is why he had to tell a serious question, so that we are like, now what, Ed? What are you doing? And he's like, no, this is really a good question. And it is, and that's valid. Like, does Bill show up? Just, you know, did Lynette live in the mother next door and we just didn't realize it because she was 4 houses down?
No, I think actually Ed does that really well in his novels. He like pulls characters from other books and brings them back in different ways. But I don't think I've done that yet. I mean, I'm trying to think if I've ever even written a short story that has had.
Oh my God. Well, the next noir at the bar, Bill and Lynette, come on.
Yeah, I don't think I have. I should
shove them down some stairs and get away with this murder.
I'm like so done with people.
You're shoving downstairs a lot to get over.
So I have not. But
now you're thinking about it.
Hey, it's a possibility. And you know, one of my friends, she writes some interconnected stuff, but I don't know if any of it, like most of it are books that she's half written. So I don't know how many of them are ideas that will end up in multiple books, or she's like, I'll just keep writing them. And then when I finish one of them, the idea will be there. And Abigail, if you're watching this, yeah, I'm calling you out, but I love them because I'm like, oh, it's this chocolate company that she's made up. That sounds really, really wonderful. But I'm just like, this is something you made up, right? Like, it's not just a UK thing that I don't understand. Just like, no, I made it up. I'm like, just checking, because sometimes I just don't get things because I'm there.
So you're like, am I going to go there on vacation? Yeah. Just like Willy Wonka?
No, this is back to my friend having me send her stuff in Nottingham. And she's like, yeah, that's a real place. I'm like, are you sure? Because I can't send stuff to Narnia either. And she's like, it's a real place. And I'm just like, are you? If we're an American, I'm still not 100%.
I know. We're not as smart as the rest of the world.
I'm just like, yeah. That, and just their places sound imaginary sometimes. I'm like, really? You just made that place up. That sounds very silly. Like, what? Paddington? Paddington's a bear. You know, it's a station. That's a place. But those are the kind of fun things. And, you know, the winery, I'm assuming, was based on some real places, but there's no actual Van Ness winery that we can take a tour of, right?
No.
No, darn. I was hoping to demand a sample of the ice wines.
I love the ice wines. I do love that it was set in Finger Lakes. I've never been there, but I have this, I think maybe like a halfway Lawrence Welk, halfway Saturday Night Live sketch about the Finger Lakes that I'm just like obsessed with. So I was like, ooh, the Finger Lakes, they can be spooky too.
So you can say Finger Lakes and I think either fingerling potatoes or finger sandwiches, because all I think about is food.
Now I'm starving.
Regina says, did someone say winery? It's like, yes, this book is set at a winery estate. So if you want to be reading about the winery,
wine,
go to the weekend retreat.
If you want to read about wine, unhealthy family dynamics, the two coolest house, like, caretakers ever, Bill and Lynette.
They're not the main characters in this.
Not the main characters at all. I'm like weirdly obsessed with them. I wasn't obsessed until he said, you don't know where the generator is. And then I'm like, I am here for you, Bill. Tara, we love having you here. Everybody who's watching this live, listening to it, just the audio. If you're listening to just the audio, at least go to YouTube or Facebook and notice the fact that Tara and I are wearing matching damn shirts.
Yes, you're missing out on the costume thing. I do still feel like we look like these are some weird rejected costumes from like Star Trek, because I feel like you could have your pipes here, like a little, the pips to say I'm captain, and then I'm blue, so I'm probably medical, which is really bad because I can't math, but that's what I feel like this is. I'm like wearing a similar kind of thing.
You look good. And it matches the cover of the book, which is beautiful. Tara, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tara.
You're welcome back anytime. And always thank you for like sharing your war stories of the writing process with us.
You're touching your tears. I have
it. We love that. And someday I feel like you and I are going to meet in person somewhere around Halloween, and we'll have like a double celebration of your birthday and my wedding anniversary and our just general love of Halloween.
And we're matching outfits.
And we'll wear matching outfits. Ed, if you're still watching,
you should wear one too.
Wear one too, but also like set that up. Have it be in Southern California so Allison can be there.
Otherwise, I don't have childcare.
Or else she doesn't have childcare. And we need her there. But thank you everybody for tuning in. Stay tuned next week. We are doing two episodes in a row for 2004 already. 2004. That's 20 years ago.
2024. Jennifer is not drunk, but however.
No, I mean, that might be the problem.
What day it is or what year.
It's the third. Sorry, didn't sleep. But yeah, we'll be back next week with Clay McLeod Chapman talking about his crab-inspired horror novel, What Kind of Mother?
And Jennifer and I might both actually be reading another book of his too, just because we can't.
Are we reading the same one?
I think so. I mean, it's one of those things where when I find out somebody's on, do I look at their backlist? Sometimes I do. And I just go, ooh, I think I'm going to listen to this next.
And normally I try to read the book the week that we do the show, the week before we do the show. But then when What Kind of Mother came out,
we got impatient.
I did get impatient. I was like, I know I'm going to forget everything by the time we do the show, but I don't care. I'm reading it now.
Mommy.
That's okay. The crabs are seared into my brain. So.
Yeah,
so, Tara, thank you. Everybody, go to Tara's website. Buy her book. Mm-hmm. She's awesome.
Thanks,
we love you.
Thank you, Tara. Great to see you in chat.
Bye. Bye.